At this time, I'd like to ask Eric, our speaker here, to come up and introduce tonight's speaker. Thank you, Eric.
Hey, everybody, I'm Eric.
Hey!
Welcome to everybody who's here tonight, newcomers, old-timers, or I guess you don't like being told that. Long newcomers, I'll call you that instead. Tonight, we're going to have the privilege of hearing from one of the guys that's probably been in our 7 o'clock Let's Rock men's Al-Anon family group. Well, at least as long as I've been coming, and I've been coming for about 10 years now. I kind of think of him as one of the giant sequoias in our pack, because he's just this gentle giant of a man. But he has a very gentle and a loving heart, and that's a beautiful combination of those two traits. I was always afraid of very big people, so he helped me sort of get over that. And so without any further ado, I'll give the time over to Roger.
Okay, I'm a little nervous. Welcome everybody to the 7 o'clock West Hollywood men's meeting. I absolutely love this meeting. We just came back, all of us, about 50 of us just came back from a retreat 2 weeks ago. And it was perfect for me that I was speaking this week. I've been coming to Al-Anon for 16 years, and I have a sponsor who's not here, but he doesn't need to be here because he has heard my story. I have a grand sponsor who is here, and he's heard enough of my story as well. I also sponsor some guys, and incidentally, I know I'm a pretty good sponsor because they hardly ever call. What brought me to Al-Anon 16 years ago is my wife's spending. She had gotten sober in AA 4 years before. She melted down on our daughter's 17th birthday. She took 4 or 5 too many Vicodin and had 4 or 5 too many glasses of wine and was kind of busted playing with her food and told me she had a problem. She went to detox and rehab, and it was where I was at was just fix her and send her home. And of course they told me to go to Al-Anon at the family night, which I went to one. And obviously they weren't paying attention because she was the one with the problem. And they were telling me to go to some meetings. And so I didn't go. And besides, I was fine. I thought I was fine. I had a busy business. We had a nice house. We had the toys, motorcycles, jet skis, and we were living an outside good life, and on the inside we were not good. So she started going to AA, and up by where we live there's a place called Rafters. And Rafters is a pretty gnarly old meeting, and she started wearing biker boots and and a biker jacket, and it took her 2 hours to get ready to go to her meeting. And she had Harley stickers in her car, and I thought sure she had like some crackhead boyfriend down there. But she started getting better. Her life started changing. Of course, I thought part of her program was hearing how she had screwed up my life. That made perfect sense to me. But one night we were in a fight, and I was trying to she wasn't fighting and I was. And I was trying to get her to start fighting, and I was pulling the low punches like you're just like your mother. That always got her going. And instead, she walked away and said, I'm not letting you affect my serenity. And when she did that, I almost spontaneously combusted. I was like, little teeny part of me wanted what she had. I was jealous of what she had just done because she had self-esteem wherever Stephen is. She had self-esteem. And I didn't, and I didn't know I didn't have it. But I wanted what she had. I didn't know really, I didn't know about Al-Anon. And she did really well in that program. At this, and so 4 years later, like 16 years ago tonight almost, or 15 years ago in a couple of weeks, she had moved out of our house and left me with a big stack of bills. And I'm not talking about just credit card bills. I'm talking about dipping into the retirement fund kind of bills. It was a serious thing. And at the same exact time, about 16 years ago, my dad was melting down, completely independent of what was going on with my wife. My dad was melting down. He was raised in an alcoholic home. My grandfather was a mean, mean man. And he taught my dad well. And my dad had moved out when I was a kid. And I used to say he took my self-esteem when he went, but I let him take it. And my dad was melting down. And my sister, I have one sister, and she lives up north, and she couldn't help taking care of him, but I was taking care of him, and we had no relationship at this point. I didn't want to have anything to do with him. And he was in the hospital, and I was taking care of him in his house, and he was a hoarder, so his house had little pathways through it. It was a real mess. And, hold on, let me get my story straight here. And so I'm out of money. I am out of money. I'm living on bean and cheese burritos from Del Taco. They're 69 cents, okay? Yeah, well, it wasn't funny at the time. I was broke. And I had my own business, and my business was doing well. And I had no money. And I'm taking care of my dad, who I had no idea how to deal with him. He's in the hospital. His next door neighbor is his doctor, this weird thing. In his house is treasures and trash. I mean, I would find a bunch of recycling, and underneath it, I would find pictures of my kids. In a junk drawer, I found a $3 gold piece with pearls around it. $3 gold pieces are worth a lot of money. A $10 gold piece with some other kind of, just crazy stuff. We had to go through everything. Meanwhile, I'm just so resentful. I'm resentful at my wife. I'm resentful at my dad. And I remember going into a gas station to fill up my truck, and my credit card got denied. And I just sat in my truck and cried. I had no idea how my life had gotten this way. No idea at all. I would go into work, I was working, I was bringing money in, and it was all going out to pay these insane bills. And during this time, one of my clients gave me some Al-Anon CDs. She was very observant that I didn't have it all together. And she gave me some Al-Anon CDs. And I'm a big audiobook listener, and I listened to these books. I'm listening to these CDs while I was cleaning out my dad's house and driving around. And the CDs were amazing because the people in the CDs, they were worse than I was in the beginning of their talk, and at the end of their talk, they were way better than I was, and I wanted what they had. One of the speakers was Mary Pearl. And if you don't know who Mary Pearl is, ask the person next to you, because you're probably the only one in here who doesn't know who she is. She's an awesome Al-Anon speaker. She's really funny and really crazy. And I thought, if she can get better, so can I. I went to my first Al-Anon meeting. So what happened was I promised myself when I was taking care of my dad that I was going to go to Al-Anon as soon as he went into the old folks' home, and instead he died. He died on June 1st, 2001, and I only tell you that because my first meeting was June 3rd. I went to the Monday night beginners meeting, and the newcomer, I never said I was new. I was so arrogant and broken, but I sat in the corner and I listened. Now, therapy was once a week. That wasn't enough for me. I needed like a lot more than that. But I listened to these people, and they were good people, and they were trying to be better. And I kept waiting for the hook, like, just write us a check for this much money and we'll tell you the secret, you know? And they never did that. They just, every week. So it's June, and this meeting has new commitments starting in July, and somebody nominated me for literature. And every cell of my body was preparing to say no. And instead, and I'm not kidding, this doesn't happen to me, a voice inside me said, don't say no. Just as I was about to say no. So I said yes, and I didn't sleep for 3 days because I knew I was gonna screw it up. And the next week, some little old lady came up to me and said, I'm new, what's a good book? And I said, oh man, I'm only here. Second week, I have this one, and she said, I'll take it. So I thought, well, you know, I better read this stuff. So I started taking it and reading it. And I'm listening at all the meetings, and I started figuring that the Al-Anons were kind of slow because you kept reading and having to have it up here for you all the time. And I was kind of getting tired of hearing the same old stuff. But one night, I heard the second step. And I thought, you know, I can do that. I can believe that something can help me get better, because I certainly have not been able to do it. And so the first step really worked for me. I came here just a real mess, at least on the inside. And I just kept listening. There was a guy at these meetings who always said, and everybody was talking about sponsors. And I would sit in there going, you know, who do these sponsors think they are telling you what to do, you know? And I'm not getting one of those. But everybody had them, and they always were talking about them. So there was one guy who always shared stuff that was wise and humble. And so I called him to see if he'd be my sponsor, because when he said no, it wouldn't be so bad. And instead, he said he'd be honored. And I can tell you, nobody had ever said that sentence to me before. And so I went to his house to work on step one, and I didn't know you really had to work on these things. You know, I just thought we were gonna hang out and then that was gonna be it. And he wanted to philosophize on step one. And I wasn't prepared for that. So, but step two I was. I studied, I did my homework, I thought about it, and we talked about it. And later on, I had a sponsee who had trouble with the word restore. He said, how can I get something back that I've never had? And I thought, well, that's a good question. So I looked it up. The word restore doesn't mean you get something. He's a computer guy, so he thinks that it's the computer thinking, right? But that's not what it means. It means you get something back that is yours because you're alive, that you were born, you're God's kid, and you deserve to have sanity. It's not, you don't get it back. You don't get it back. Just like health. You can be born sick and get healthy. So that's what restore means. And while I was at it, I looked up sanity. Even in the big dictionaries, sanity says the same thing in every one of them. It says soundness of mind. Well, I didn't know what that meant, so I looked up the word sound. And in those big dictionaries, sound is a whole page. Sound means well-made, solid, integrity, strong, deep, like in the word sonar. And that's my higher power right there. It's inside me. It was given to me. And it's mine. It's nobody else's. And I don't have to get it. It's there. And step three, I thought step three just was all you had to do and you'd be fine. Except I was forgetting that word decision. I have to decide to do that, to turn my thoughts and my actions over to God on a like second by second basis sometimes. You know, I do my prayers on my knees every morning and night, and I pray a lot during the day, and I will come back to step three. And in step four, I did it by the way of the AA five column method. And that was easy because I was a journaler. The only thing that helped me before I came to Al-Anon was journaling, and I was a big journaler. And so it was easy to just sit down and write all these people, and it just flowed out. All those people, man, they were easy to come by. But there was one column that was tough, and that was the one that's my part. And I struggled with that. You know, for instance, my dad beat me, and I don't remember it. In fact, my sister tells me that the worst day of her life was the day I got beaten, and I don't remember it. And I just read a couple of days ago in Hope for Today that that denial is a shock absorber for the spirit. Yeah? And that's what I needed that. Yeah, the fourth column was tough, but I did it. And then I met with my sponsor one day, and I rode around with him in his truck while he did errands, and I did my fifth step with him. I had my notebook on my lap, and I would read across the, you know, I'd read across the thing and say, I'm resentful at this person for this. And then I'd look over at him, and he'd go, okay. And then I'd read another one, and he'd go, ha, I did that. And then I'd read another one, and he'd go, And then I read one that I thought was really bad. And he'd just go, yeah. And it was hard for me to do this. And I realized at the time that I thought, being this vulnerable to somebody, that he was going to pull over and kick my ass. That's what I thought was going to happen. And he never did that. When I got done reading him everything, he said, do you notice any, what did he say? Not pattern, but similarities. Or did you notice anything in what you'd read me? And I sure did. I noticed that I had a lot of denial, low self-esteem, insecurity mainly. Those three things, and a bunch of others, but those three things really jump out at me when I read this to him. We went back to his house, got on our knees, held our hands, said the third step prayer, and the seven step prayer, and he said, congratulations, you've just done steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. And it felt so good, I took a year off. I didn't do any step work for a year. I mean, I went to meetings and I did, you know, my commitments and stuff, but I just, and so because, like I said in the beginning, step one worked me, step 6 and 7 worked me, because I was so amazed that I had created all my misery. It wasn't all those people in the first column of my fourth step. It was me who created all my misery with my weird thinking. And now I don't have to think that anymore, but I don't really know how to get out of that. But I'm still a few steps left. And in that year, I spent that whole year amazed that I had caused my own problems. I love blame. Blame works for me. Here's a good one for you. If you take the me out of blame, you're left with blah, blah, blah. I found that out. But I was ready to make my list. I was humbled now. I was humbled by my own part in my own misery. And so I started making my list. A few things that weren't on my list, my stepmother wasn't on my list. I was a real jerk at my dad's funeral. And I have some property up in one of the canyons up in Santa Clarita, and we don't put rhinestone collars on our dogs and dress them up and stuff like that. And I wasn't very good to some of our dogs, and I'm not proud of that. But I will tell you, the dog I have now, I take to work with me and sleeps in my bed. So, I'm different toward dogs. There was a guy on my list, one of my high school friends, and I did something when we were in high school, and I hadn't even thought about it until I was doing my list. And my sponsor told me when I was doing my ninth step that I was to call him before I did any amends, so I didn't make it worse, which I could have done. And I did that guy first. It seemed like the worst one, and it just seemed like a good idea to do the hardest one first. He lived out in Lake Los Angeles, which, if you don't know where that is, it's the Lancaster of Lancaster, all right? you see a lot of blue tarps, you're there. And but I went to his house and I said, listen, man, I said, he just wanted to hang out and play guitars and remember when. And I said, that thing that happened that day, I did it. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I had to remind him and explain it to him. And it was like so huge for me and he couldn't remember it. He said, oh yeah, well that's okay. And then we, I don't care. And we were talking. And then we hung out for a while and I brought it up again and he blew it off. And as I was leaving, I remember I just leaned up against my truck and I said, dude, I did that day. And I didn't realize till now, really, how much that has poisoned me. All these years, it's just been sitting in there festering and screwing me up. And I want to tell you, I was wrong. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was wrong. And he just said, it's okay. That guy is now sober. And he wasn't drunk at the time, but he's now sober. He's still a really good friend of mine. I talked to his wife twice this week. They're clients of mine and I get to not charge him. Now, is that a gift? My hardest amends has turned out to be this huge blessing. And I made a bunch of other amends. I went to my stepmom's house and it was a big deal. I did not know how good I'd feel. Driving back from Lake Los Angeles, I felt like I was flying a glider. It was just unbelievable. And I didn't know that those things, if you're worried about your fourth step, don't worry about that. The ninth one's harder. That makes the 10th step easy. It's a lot easier to, well, it's easiest to avoid doing a 10th step, but if you have to make one, it feels really good to make one. By the time I got to the 11th step, my life had really changed. And I wanted more of what I was getting in my life. So it was easy. It just says what to do. Just pray and meditate. I meditate a lot more now. I pray a lot more now. And I don't know if you all know it, but there's a prayer room right across the way there. And there's never anybody in it. And in the 12th step, around this time, somebody had asked me to do a panel. And I started taking Al-Anon members to a rehab center. And I loved it. I loved taking like people who'd been coming 6 months, who just learned that you get a sponsor, you go to meetings, and you take commitments. And I take them to these rehab centers, and the AA is kind of bored and looking around, and the spouse is like crying. And it was fun. But I think I liked it a little too much, because during that time I got a call to be the institution's coordinator for panel 49. And I called my sponsor and I said, I'm in over my head this time. He said, which position did you take? And I said, institutions. And he said, oh, I did that, I'll help you. Right? I try to be an example in step 12. So I have a bit of time left, and the reason why I do it this way is because I was in for a new bottom. My wife had gone to a doctor who told her she was an alcoholic, she was bipolar, to take all these drugs and you'll be fine. Well, she wasn't fine. She became a zombie. And this is before zombies were like starring in movies. It wasn't funny at the time. We would drive somewhere and she would just stare straight ahead out the window. I watched her one time walk down to change the thermostat. It took 100% of her concentration to just do that. And I was going to jump out of my skin. And I ran into my grand sponsor at a meeting. And he said, how's it going, Raj? And I said, terrible. He said, what's going on? And I told him. I said, what do I do? And he said, be a loving husband and keep the focus on yourself. Well, I knew how to keep the focus on myself because I broke the steps, but I didn't know how to be a loving husband. I wasn't taught that, and I didn't know how to be one. And I was leaving for work one day. It was a Saturday, and my wife was asleep. And as I was walking out the door, I thought, oh, you know, a loving husband would kiss his wife goodbye right now. And when I walked back in to kiss her goodbye, I would have rather thrown up on the floor than kiss her. It just made me sick to do that. And instead I did it. And when I kissed her and was walking out, I felt better. And I found out then that love was a two-way street. When I'm loving to her, I'm also loving myself. And about this time our son got married. And he put on an unbelievable wedding. Unbelievable wedding. Up in at that Firestone house where they had the bachelor. You know, it was just unbelievable. And my wife, Miss, she showed up for the shower when it was over. They were cleaning up. And she knocked on the door and they were like, it's over. She missed the rehearsal. She just didn't show up. She made it to the rehearsal dinner and my son said to me, Dad, I don't know how to get Mom to show up to the wedding. And I said, I'll take care of that, son. Don't worry. And when I left for the wedding the next day, she was in the shower. And I was sure she wouldn't make it, just like she had made it to the other things. And I called my sponsor, and I don't remember what he said. I called some of my friends, but one of my friends said, you have been in boot camp going to Al-Anon all this time. Today you're going to war. You need to take everything you've learned with you in Al-Anon when you go to the wedding. So I walked right up to my son and I said, I told you I could get Mom to get here. I was wrong, but let's have a good day. And I hugged him and he said, yeah. And so we started off having a good day. She did show up. I'm so glad, because it would have killed her to not show up. And it was very insane and very crazy. And she went into the house with all the girls. And it was so intense for our daughter that she wound up having to go to therapy and Al-Anon just because of dealing with her mom that night. She was tough to be around. And during the wedding, afterwards when everybody's dancing, I saw this big group of people all hooting, and I went over to see what's going on. It was my wife was practically break dancing for everybody. It was just like, yeah. And it was really, really crazy. The next day she missed the brunch on the beach. She just didn't show up. I didn't know where she was. So it was horrifying for me. I just didn't know how to deal with this. Even though I'd had all this Al-Anon, I didn't know how to deal with it. Although I was trying to be loving. The day before the wedding was our 25th wedding anniversary. She missed that. And during this time, one of my clients came in, and she'd been in Al-Anon a long time, and she was a friend of my wife's. She was my wife's boss. And she said, how's it going? And I said, terrible. She says, what's going on? So I told her. And I said, what do I do? And she said, I can tell you what to do. It works every time, and it takes 3 weeks. Thank you. And I said, what's that? And she said, pray for her. On your knees, every day, that she gets everything she wants from her higher power for her highest good. I called her the next day and said, what was that? And she said, she told me again, pray for her that she gets everything she wants from her higher power for her highest good. And I did that. And like I said, steps worked me. I prayed for her sometimes like 100 times a day, or 1,000 times a day. Almost every time I thought, you effing biatch, you ruined my life. I stopped myself and said, no. I pray that you get everything you want from your higher power for your highest good. And then 2 seconds later, it would start over again, because that's how I live. I'm not kidding. I lived in that loop of, you ruined my life, you suck. You know, and I had lived that way. That's a terrible way to live. That's why I keep coming back, because I don't want to go back to feeling that way. And what that did for me It didn't take 3 weeks, it took a month. And a month or so after that, it was Wednesday, I was getting ready to go to work, and she came by and she said, "Where are you going? You go to work on Wednesdays?" And I said, "Well, since you asked, I'm going to an attorney." She said, "Why?" And I said, "Because I want a divorce." I was detached now. She was her and I was me. This year, we've been married 43 years and we're still married. And but we were attached. Everything about us was attached. And now all of a sudden it wasn't. And I just said, she said, "Why?" And I said, "Because I don't want to live this way anymore." I mean, I felt it in my bones. I would have rather lived in my car than lived the way I was living and feeling the way I was feeling. And she said, "Let's work it out." And I said, I did say that actually. But then I knew I'd have to explain that to my sponsor. So instead I said, "What do you have in mind?" And she said, "I'll go back to AA. I'll go to the one program for spending. And I want to go to a therapist with you, male therapist." The lady who told me to pray for her that same day had given me a male therapist's number. So I called him and made an appointment. And on the way to my appointment, I called my sponsor. On every session, I called my sponsor, and he said, "Listen, be open-minded and tell the truth." So I did that. And at the first session, right by where he was sitting was something that looked familiar, and I said, "What are those things right there by where you're sitting?" And he said, "Oh, these are Al-Anon directories. I've been in Al-Anon 35 years. I didn't know that. So when I told my sponsor that, he said, "So you're in a slip-free zone. Say anything you want and let him correct you. For example, she doesn't go to enough meetings." And he'd say, "That's none of your business how many meetings she goes to." My sponsor had to say, "It's none of your effing business how many meetings it goes to. And I don't want to hear that again, so I don't say that anymore." But that's an example. But what happened at this therapist's was I heard her story. I heard what made drinking and using work for her. Even though she was raised very wealthy, she had some really messed up things happen to her. And I knew them. But I just blew them off. And I heard them when we were there. And I could feel her pain. And eventually the therapist said, "Listen, I want to see her alone." And what I didn't say was, "You're the crazy one, see?" You know, I didn't say that. I said, "Yeah." You know, and I was glad that she was working on these things with him. It was a huge thing. So we're still married. And she is, she's become the girl I wish she was when I married her. You know, we just had like a 25-year bad patch in the middle, but. But it's been worth it. We have two awesome kids. My son needs to go to Al-Anon. He thinks he can think his way out of things. My daughter is in Al-Anon, and it's awesome. And I get to be an example to my kids of how to live and how to act. And I don't, like, I'm not their dad anymore. You know, and I just get to act like somebody who a dad would act like. A couple of things have struck me. A couple of tools. One of them is the acronym THINK. It's on page 106 back there in Paths to Recovery. It's on sale tonight if you're new. We're selling them at our cost. And it says, "Is my response going to be thoughtful, honest, intelligent, necessary, and kind?" And I remember a fight would be starting and I'd be like, okay. Is my response gonna be thoughtful? And I haven't thought about it very long. Is it gonna be honest? Oh yeah. Is it gonna be intelligent? I don't think so. Is it going to be necessary? I don't know about that either. Is it going to be kind? No. Meanwhile, she's, are you going to say anything? And I'd be like, I can't think of anything to say. And she'd say, well, here's what you could have said. And then she would tell me. And I was like, whoa, none of that was what I was going to say. But what I was able to do was say, I'll get back to you on that. So I'd meditate on it, I'd write on it, I'd talk to my sponsor, maybe if I was leading a meeting, use it as a topic. And then I'd come back to her and I'd say, you know that thing you mentioned the other day? I can't do that, but I could do this. What do you think of that? And she'd say, okay. But the look in her eyes when I said that was that she knew I cared about what happened and that I cared about her. And so, and that other thing you said, I think I could do that. Could we just wait a few months and do that later on and kind of do it slowly or something? I don't even remember what it was. She said, okay. And I went through the whole list of everything she brought up and went back through them with her in a, I'm going to say it, in an adult way. We had not had an adult conversation, I don't think, up until that time. But we have them now from time to time because of the program. Another one is on page 90 of the AA 12 and 12. And if you have a problem with that, call your sponsor. And it says, and this is what exactly what it says. It says it's a spiritual axiom. And I didn't know what axiom was. Well, I should have because I've had plenty of math, but I just couldn't remember at the time. An axiom means it's true. So it's spiritually true that every time I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, the problem lies within me. Sort of sounds like keep the focus on yourself and be a loving husband to me. And that's whenever I'm like in a bad way, I have to reflect on that. I don't like what it says, but if it's a spiritual axiom, I can't ignore it. And this is a spiritual program, so I better pay attention. I just have a couple minutes, and I'll just tell you one kind of quick thing that happened kind of recently. I called my son a little while ago, and he was just about to have a stroke. He was so mad at his wife because she had somehow allowed one of their son's friends, who was like 5 years old, to poo in their hot tub. And he was so mad. And I listened to him, and he was just, I'm never going in it again. And they go in it every night, you know? And I'm like, oh, I'm listening to this. And finally, and I was kind of talking with him a bit about it, but he finally said, I'll probably be able to laugh about this in 10 years. And that's what got me, because I said, yep, maybe. And in between now and then, you are going to hurt your family. And I said, I taught you this. I taught you how to make a big thing out of nothing, because that's what I did. That's the kind of dad I was. You know, just, you just act this way so I can be okay. And his wife told me that night that they laughed about it. And that was huge, because he's not that way. He's rigid. He's rigid, rigid. And I'm hoping that I can be an example to him to not be that way, because I taught him that. And I hurt my family. And I'm sort of unhurting him. I'm getting to make amends to them by keeping coming back. If you're new, just keep coming. Keep coming to this meeting. Come on the nights the chicks aren't here. Sorry, girls. Oh, and one more thing. I didn't share this at the retreat, guys. The last meeting we had was on action. What's your action? What action things are you doing in the program? And I forgot to share this. The action thing that I do now, like today even, is in the morning I pray that when I go to bed tonight, that I'm proud of who I am. and I hope I can do that tonight. Thanks you guys for listening.
So awesome, so inspiring, Roger.
Let's give Roger another hand.